This week's parasha is Parashas Chukas Balak. And in Parashas Chukas, in Perek Chaf Aleph Pasuk Chaf Zayin, the Torah says, Al Kain Yaimru HaMoshlim. Therefore, the poets, the Moshlim, the people that are gifted in terms of making parables and making poems, they say, Bayu Cheshbon, let's come to the city of Cheshbon. Tibone V'sikainen Irsichen, let us establish and build up the major city, the metropolis owned by Sichon. There's a Gemara in Bava Basra that homiletically interprets this pasuk as much different than the Pshuta Shel Mikra, or at least seemingly different. The simple pshat in this pasuk is that what happened was that Sichon had a city called Cheshbon. Klal Yisrael was not able to ever attack. Sichon had a city called Cheshbon, which used to be owned by Moav. Klal Yisrael were never able to attack Moav because the Torah says, Al Totzer es Moav, you're not allowed to attack them. So once Sichon went and attacked Moav and won and conquered that city of Cheshbon, so now Klal Yisrael was able to go and chop away the city of Cheshbon because it was sort of kashered by Sichon. If it was Mayav's property, we would not be able to get it. But now that Sichon conquered Cheshbon, now HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Rishus for Klal Yisrael to conquer this city of Cheshbon, because now it was no longer the Rishus of Mayav, it was the Rishus of Sichon. That's how, as Chazal say, Amon u'Mayav tiaru b'Sichon. That the lands of Amon and Moav, they were matur, they were cleansed, they were purified, they were kashered through the conquering of Sichon. Sichon, Melech HaMoiri, conquered the lands of Moav, and through that, Klal Yisrael were able to be zeiche in these lands through Sichon. So the Gemara in Bava Basra gives us another pshat in what this means. Homiletically, they darshan as follows. And this is a very famous drasha because all the Musar Svarim bring down this drasha. And I'll tell you why in a second. They say, Bayu Alkein Yaimru HaMoshlim means Alkein Yaimru HaMoshlim Belibam. Not the poets, not the people that gave parables, but those that are Moshel Belibam, those that have a command over their hearts, their Bnei Torah, their Bali Musar, their Bnei Aliyah, their people that really care about things, they take life seriously. Al Kein Yaimru HaMoshlim Belibay, those people that are able to conquer their hearts, they say, Bayu Cheshbon. What does it mean, Bayu Cheshbon? Bayu V'nachshev Cheshbonei Shel Olam. Cheshbon doesn't just mean the city of Cheshbon. Cheshbon means let's make a Cheshbon HaNefesh. Let's make the Cheshbon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Let's make a Cheshbon of the Olam. Schar mitzvah keneged hefseidah. How much is a mitzvah versus not doing a mitzvah? All of these things are the Cheshbonis that a person is expected to make if they are Moshlim Belibad. People that are Hefker, they never think about these things. People that are not Moshlim in their hearts, they have no conscience. What do they think about? They think about nothing. They think about doing more taivas and more averas and more gaiva and more bad midas. That's all people that are not Moshel Belibam think about. But Al Kein Yaimru HaMoshlim, those that are Moshel Belibam, what do they say? Bayu Cheshbon. Bayu V'nachshev Cheshbon Eshel Olam. Let's make a Cheshbon. Let's make a Cheshbon HaNefesh. Are we doing what's right? How's our life going? How's our Seder going? How's our summer going? How's our Shmir Seinayim doing? How are we doing? Are our mitzvahs what they could be? Could we maybe prune away some of the bad stuff from the mitzvahs that we are doing? Could we maybe stop a lot of the averus that we are so completely overtaken by? What can we do different? People with a conscience will think that way. Al Kein Yaimru HaMoshlim, if you're Moshel Belibay, then you will say, Bayu Cheshbon. You will say, come, let's make a Cheshbon HaNefesh. Let's, Bayu V'nachshev Cheshbon Eshel Olam. I wanted to share with you this morning a special vart that I saw in a certain sefer. And the vart is as follows. I don't really know who the person who said this vart is. I know his name, but I don't know who it is. But I'm going to tell you the vart that he says. Like I said before, the pasuk spoke previous to this pasuk, Al Kein Yemer HaMeshlem, about the way it is that Amon and Moav were conquered by Sichai Melech HaMori, and by doing so, he was able to kasher all the lands of Moav. If not for the fact that Sichai had a victory, a military victory over Moav, we would never be able to pick off the land of Cheshbon, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Al Totzer Es Moav, do not chaper Moav. I don't want you to do anything wrong to Moav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a special schus for Moav, and you're not supposed to start, we're not allowed to do war against them. So how are we able to ever get Cheshbon? Cheshbon was like the crown jewel of the Moabite empire. How are we going to get that? Okay, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, well, Sichon is now attacking it. Sichon attacking Cheshbon will make it that now Klal Yisrael is able to conquer the land of Cheshbon. So listen to this vart. He says like this: when a person like Sichon had this military conquest, he won Cheshbon. He like mamish got like the most prized possession in real estate in the world. Cheshbon was a Spitz city. And they were able to go in, take it over. What was going through Sichon Melech HaMori's mind? Imagine if you were Sichon at this point. Sichon HaMori was thinking, wow, like, I am the king of the world. He was like the master of, he was playing a real game of risk. Risk is, you know, world dominance. You want to take over as many countries as you could. Here was Sichon Melech HaMori. He went in, his tanks rolled right in. He chopped the city of Cheshbon. He thought, wow, I'm the king of the world. His gaiva was through the roof. He thought that this could not be better news for me. And on the other hand, Klal Yisrael were saying, oh, yeah, this is terrible, right? Sichon is so powerful. What's going to be with us? How are we going to ever be able to conquer these lands, and they're getting stronger and stronger. What happened in the end? In the end, Klal Yisrael were able to take over Sichon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, take over from Sichon the land of Cheshbon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you're going to fight Sichon, you're going to win Sichon. And so what happens is that what seemed very, very bad from a human perspective, it seemed like it was a victory for Russia, and it was a terrible defeat for good people. Klal Yisrael were like, uh-oh, this is really bad. Sichon is on a roll. It turned out in retrospect, in hindsight, you're able to see how HaKadosh Baruch Hu had an exact Cheshbon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the land of Cheshbon over to Sichon so that Klal Yisrael would be able to conquer it. If Cheshbon was just staying in the realm, in the domain of Moav, it would be off limits to Klal Yisrael. There would be an Issur D'oraisa for Klal Yisrael to go and take that land. But now that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the land over to Sichon, Sichon thought that was the best news for him. The world thought it was horrible news. It turns out, v'nahapechu, everything was the opposite. Sichon's conquest, all of that Sichon made, all that Sichon won, all of the victory that he felt, the pride that was filling his heart, all of that in retrospect was turned on its head. And Klal Yisrael was now able to take it over. It was the best news in the world in retrospect for Klal Yisrael, the fact that Sichon conquered the land, because he kashered it. He kashered this whole land of Cheshbon so that now Klal Yisrael was able to have it, where they would not have been able to have it were it not for that. So the Sefer wants to say, that's what it means. Bayu Cheshbon, Al Kein Yemra Meishel, if you're a Meishel B'libay, if you really want to be a Ben Tayer, you want to be a Ben Aliyah, you want to be a Bal Musar, you want to be able to see the way the world really works, Bayu Cheshbon. Look at the city of Cheshbon, and through doing so, it's not just a random drasha that's unrelated to the pasuk. The pasuk itself teaches us the greatest mussar. Bayu v'nachshev cheshbeinei shel makim. The city of Cheshbon teaches every one of us to look at the cheshbon of Eilam, the cheshbeinei shel Eilam. Who's the Eilam? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Eilam. If you want to understand how HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world, the cheshbon with which HaKadosh Baruch Hu dominates the world, orchestrates the world, operates the world, look at the city of Cheshbon. Cheshbon, you don't need anything else. You don't need to know any world history other than this battle of Cheshbon, because through Cheshbon, you're able to make a Cheshbon HaNefesh yourself and see the Cheshbon HaOlam and understand how it's only because of something bad, seemingly bad that happened. Sichain went on an attack against Mayav. Chaptais from Mayav Cheshbon. And guess what happened? Now Cheshbon was able to be picked off and to be put into Klal Yisrael's column. Were it not for that seemingly terrible incident of Cheshbon, we never would have gotten it. It's only because HaKadosh Baruch Hu enabled Sichain. He moved the pieces on the chessboards that Sichain should now be able to take over Cheshbon, and now it's not run by Mayav, so now there's no Isser of Al-Tatsaras Mayav. Now Klal Yisrael was able to get it. What we see from this, Rabbi Yisai, is a very important Yisai. And first we'll speak about the worldwide implications of this Yisai, and then we'll speak about the personal implications of this Yisai. The worldwide implications of this Yisai is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world, which we know, but the way he runs the world is a very interesting thing. When you open up a newspaper, when you look at news on your phone or wherever you get your information from, and you see that there is an event that takes place in the world, whatever it might be, you think in the present, because we're not Nevi'im, so you basically see it as is. So if, let's say, Russia goes one day and they chop Crimea. Russia wanted this little part of Crimea. I think it was owned, if I'm not mistaken, by Greece, by the Ukrainians. And one day Putin just decides to like roll his tanks in. No one's going to start up with Russia. And he chops this little area called Crimea, and the whole world went up in arms. It's still in Russian territory. Now, we don't understand why God allowed that to happen. We don't understand what the cheshbon for this was. But there is a cheshbon. There is a cheshbon, and the cheshbon is somehow going to be good for Yidden. Whatever happens in the world is for HaKadosh Baruch Hu taking care of Klal Yisrael. So why this is happening, we don't know. But you can rest assured that every single thing that happens in the world is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's orchestration for Klal Yisrael. It might be that this might help Eretz Yisrael someday. It might be that there's a Yid that has a Russian passport that's found in Crimea, and because he has a Russian passport instead of a Ukrainian passport, his life will be spared. Whatever it is, we don't know. But every single thing that happens in the world happens with a cheshbon. You know, today is the 3rd of July. So it's two important things happen on the 3rd of July. First, it's the day before the United States is officially a country. It also is my birthday. July 3rd is my birthday. Okay, but that's a different cheshbon. No, thank you. But today's a national holiday, so I want to just say a quick vart that Rav Schwab used to say, and I think it really ties in beautifully to what we're saying, that he said that in 1492, in the year 1492, which was a terrible, terrible year for Klal Yisrael, is a terrible year for Jewish history, because it was the year that the Spanish Jews were expelled from Spain. You had a choice. You can either become Christian, you could be burned at the stake, or you can get out. And the king and queen of Spain, Ferdinand and Isabel, they basically were rabid anti-Semites. They wanted all the Jews out, except for one Jew, the Abarbanel. Barbanel was their finance minister. They needed the court Jew to keep the economy roaring. So they offered him to stay, and he said, no, if my people are leaving, I'm leaving also. So it was not a good move for them, because then he went to Portugal, he built up their economy. Anyway, but 1492 was a terrible year. What happened to the Yidden in 1492? They were expelled. Some Yidden had to travel to Russia. Some Yidden had to travel to Europe. They had to relocate all over the world. That was the golden age of Spanish Jewry until you had the Rambam living in Spain. You had the Abarbanel. You had the Ebenezer. You had so many Rishonim. All the great Rishonim, and you know, were living in Spain during the golden era, and there, you know, hundreds of others. And all of a sudden, they were all kicked out. Terrible, terrible event that happened there in 1492. Another thing happened in the year 1492, interestingly. That was the year that Columbus set sail to discover the New World, to discover America. Who sent him there? The same Rishonim that kicked us Jews out of Spain, Ferdinand and Isabel, they'd said that they wanted him to go and travel, and he was supposed to go one place, he ended up in the wrong place, but he ended up discovering the country that we're living in right now. Now, this country that we're living in right now is not just Stama country. This is a country, and that's why I feel that it's mamish like a yontif today, because America is a great country. America is a great country for Klal Yisrael, because when we needed to escape, whether it was in the 19th century, in the 20th century, from wherever countries we were in, whether it was Russia, Poland, Ukraine, and then during World War II, from Germany, from Western Europe countries, Eastern European countries, where did we go? We came to America primarily. Okay, America, I know that they didn't take a lot of us, and the St. Louis was turned back, but the fact that we're here today shows that we were basically saved in no small part because there is a country called the United States of America. And America has been a tremendous country for us in this galus. It's a galus, we're living in galus, we have to remember that, but America has shown, it's a wonderful country. It grants us all the privileges that we would never be able to dream about in other countries. Freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, everything that we want, we have here, Baruch Hashem, Bli Ayin Hara. And so it's a tremendous, you have to have akaras, you have to say Maidim with extra kavana today. In any event, says Rav Schwab, look at how HaKadosh Baruch Hu ran the world. Let's examine from God's perspective, from a Kisei Kavadika vantage point, you see things a lot different. 1492 is a horrible year for Klal Yisrael, and it was. There's no two ways about it. But when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created that Makkah, he was already at the same time beginning a refuah for the Makkah. Because all the descendants, or many of the descendants of the Gerushei Sfarad, the people that were expelled from Spain, and wherever they went, whether it was Russia, whether it was Europe, wherever they went, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was already preparing an Arei Miklat for them a couple of hundred years later, of course, but called America. And America would be the Arei Miklat that Klal Yisrael would enjoy taking shelter in when all other countries were on fire. This is all what happened with Cheshbon. The city of Cheshbon looked like it was conquered by a Russia. Terrible, terrible time. A dark period when Sichon was on the attack, took over Cheshbon. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu wasn't scared of Sichon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu permitted Sichon to do that. And at the same time, he was preparing for Klal Yisrael to have their ultimate victory, to snatch Cheshbon away from Sichon. So what seemed terrible was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's planning for Klal Yisrael. It was all for Klal Yisrael's good, ultimately. And we could find many, many examples of this throughout history. I guess the one that comes to mind the most to me is the Shivas Mir, when Mir in Poland was, it was during the war, every other yeshiva was decimated, Rachman al-Itzlan, Telz, and Panovich, and Brisk. These cities, these Tyredika cities, were all wiped out, mamish liquidated. And many, many others that I'm not mentioning. The Mir yeshiva, miraculously, was the only yeshiva to survive intact. Now, how did that happen? It happened because of a string of miracles that nobody would have understood except for the Rabbeinu Shalom. A few of the miracles was that there was a Japanese consulate who had a person working for him by the name of Sugihara. Sugihara, it turns out, had a warm spot in his heart for Yidden, or he felt bad for them, whatever his cheshbon was, and he was meiser nefesh to stamp hundreds of passports, hundreds of visas, to enable all the people in the Mir to go to get out of the country that they were in, out of Poland, out of Russia, and to basically travel to Japan. And then from Japan, they went to a city in China called Shanghai. How did they get there? How were they able to travel? There was a railroad called the Trans-Siberian Railroad. It was a railroad that cost billions of dollars. The Russian government, no one understood why they did this. It was a weird fluke of history that they would even build this railroad. It ran into the middle of nowhere. It basically connected one side of Russia with the other. And Russia, if you ever see a map, is huge. It's ginormous. It's half a map. It's basically half the world is Russia. The only problem is half of Russia you can't live in. It's all Siberia. It's frozen most of the year. There's a train track that they built from one end to the other. It cost billions of dollars. It cost them hundreds, maybe thousands of lives. They worked on it for years and years and years. Nobody understood why the Tsar was building this thing, for what, for whom, like, who needs this? And he wanted to connect his malucha. He wanted to make that Russia should be, but he built it very schlocky. He used very cheap material, and I think there was only originally one track, so a train could only go in one direction, and then it went back. It was like a very ill-conceived thing. No one understood why they built that until the Mir Yeshiva needed to get out of Mir and out of Eastern Europe. And they got tickets on this train. It was very expensive. They traveled first class for some very interesting story. How they needed the money wired because they only wanted cash. The people that were giving out these tickets on the train. Nisim in a flight that they were able. Imagine if I told you there's a train of Yeshiva Bachrim that need to, you know, to go from one place to another, and you have to raise, you know, $10 million, and you have to do it by today at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. What would you do? That's exactly what happened. You know, we could go, give them a couple of dollars here, a couple of dollars there. They raised millions of dollars, not in today's prices, but in those days, in 1930 prices. $1 million is like, I don't know, $20 million. Try to raise $20 million in a few hours. And they did that. They wired the money to a bank near the train station. They were able to pay to get everybody on this train. They were on this train for days and weeks. And they finally got off, and they took a boat from the last place in Russia to Japan, which isn't so far away. And then they stayed there a little bit. Then they went from there to Shanghai. In Shanghai, which is really where they spent most of the war, there was a building that was a shul, but nobody really davened in that shul. It was a beautiful, large shul that was built by a not Shemesh Shabbos Yid, but his father appeared to him a dream that he wanted him to build a shul. This very wealthy tycoon himself was married to a Chinese woman. He wasn't, you know, he was not Shemir Termitzis at all, but he built a shul in honor of his father, his mother, and he basically built a spitz shul in the heart of the most expensive real estate in Shanghai. It was like, imagine like on the corner of Fifth Avenue and 57th Street in Manhattan. It was a street called Museum Road. He built this spitz shul. No one lives there. So it was an empty shul. It had it had chairs. And it was not functioning, at least not during the week. Maybe on Shabbos they put together a minyan or something. Exactly the number of seats in that shul were the number of seats that the Mir Yeshiva needed to establish their yeshiva in Shanghai. Exactly, to the seat. They had carpenters come and build special shtenders for them, like they were used to in yeshiva. And there's a famous picture of the whole Mir Yeshiva in Shanghai sitting by their shtenders, including Reb Chaim Shulevitz, Reb Chatzka Levenstein, and all the gedolim that came out of Shanghai, Reb Shmuel Birnbaum as a bachar, and many others, Reb Leib Bakst, and many, many others. These were nisim and aflois. Reb Chatzkel Levenstein used to say that every bacher has to keep a diary in the mirror and write down all the nisim, because you're not going to believe it later on. People aren't going to believe it. The nisim were like open miracles. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was literally orchestrating all of this. Cheshbon, bayu cheshbon, bayu v'nachshiv cheshbon eshel olam. You want to figure out the way the world works? Look at the city of Cheshbon. It seemed terrible. It seemed when they built the Russian train tracks, maybe that looked like a big nitzachon for the Malchus Hazadon, which was Russia, and maybe this, and then nobody understood it. It was for Klal Yisrael. Sugihara for Klal Yisrael. That shul that was built for Klal Yisrael, for Tyra. Everything in the world operates like the city of Cheshbon, just like Cheshbon. We didn't understand it. Sichon took it over. It seemed like bad news. Oh, Baruch Hashem, in the end, it ended up meriting Klal Yisrael. That's how the world works. That's how the world operates. Everything that happens in the world is for the ultimate good of Klal Yisrael. And so when you read a newspaper and you see events and you think this is totally unrelated to Klal Yisrael, unrelated. You know, if there is COVID or there's riots or there's, something happening in the Middle East or in China or in Russia, or everything is HaKadosh Baruch Hu operating the world somehow, some way. And if you would be a historian, you'd have time to like really look back in history, and you would probably be able to put together a very interesting thesis about exactly how many, many, if not all things that we know about in history can really be understood as for Klal Yisrael. The great Reb Mendel Kaplan, who was a Rebbe, who was a brilliant Adam Gadol Batayra, he was a Rebbe in Skokie before he went to Philly. So when he was in Skokie, he just came off the boat from Lithuania. He was like Chavrusa the Rochanan Wasserman, he was that brilliant. And he became a Rosh Hashiva in Skokie Yeshiva. And he used to come into Shir in the morning with a Chicago Tribune newspaper, or the Chicago Times, whatever it was. Yeah. And he says, "You're going to teach me English," because he only spoke Yiddish. He wanted to learn English to be able to relate to the American boy. He says, "You're going to teach me how to read this newspaper. And in turn, I'm going to teach you how to read a newspaper. You'll teach me the English, and I'll teach you how to really understand, how to learn it up like a Rishon." Because you have to understand that everything that happens in the world is really for Klal Yisrael. And you just read it as like an interesting story. This happened and that happened. This person was shot. This person died. This person, you know, became prime minister. This person became, Brexit and this. Every event, oh, it's not negaya me. How's it negaya me? It might not be negaya you personally, but it's negaya Klal Yisrael, negaya Eretz Yisrael, negaya Tyra. Everything that happens in the world, if you have the right hashkafas, you'll know why it's good for Klal Yisrael, why it's bad for Klal Yisrael, and how ultimately it might turn out for the best. And if you have the ability to have hindsight and live long enough to see how things develop and how things ripple out, you'll be able to see clearly how every event really was for Klal Yisrael. Al kein yaimru ha-meishlim, the people that are meisha b'libam, if you want to get a good grip on your heart and understand that there's nothing to worry about because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the show, bayu cheshbon, come to the city of Cheshbon, bayu v'nachshiv cheshbon eshel olam, and by doing so, you'll be able to see a cheshbon shel olam, you'll be able to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu plays chess with the world, and all for Klal Yisrael's victory. Now this is true nationally, like I said. This is true globally. But I always like to bring things a little bit closer to home so we can have a personal takeaway besides for that Shkafa takeaway that everything that happens is for Klal Yisrael, that you probably know already. But, and this you also know, but it's very important to Chazer. Because if you don't speak about this constantly, even though it's from the Ikrei Hadas, it's so pashut. But if you don't speak about it constantly, you forget and you get nervous in life. The way that we described HaKadosh Baruch Hu orchestrating Cheshbon the way that we describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu orchestrating, and that was Rav Schwabsvart about United States of America with the Spanish Inquisition, the Spanish expulsion, the way that we describe what happened in the Mir Yeshiva, how everything, what seemed bad, was really all good, this is what happens in our daily life, all of our daily lives. A lot of times in our life, things are not good. And things seem downright bad. And we complain. Boy, this is a really bad day. I missed my plane. I missed my thing. My car had a flat tire. I have to do this. I have to do that. And we get very, very depressed. We get very nervous. And we lose emunah. We lose emunah because we feel that, you know, other people have it great and we don't. And look, God hates me because he did this to me, he did that to me. If you want to really have a true perspective on what's going on and you want to control your heart from having these anxieties, from having these fears, again, enter the beautiful city of Cheshbon. Because by doing so, you'll be able to get a glimpse into the Cheshbon Shel Olam, how HaKadosh Baruch Hu chooses to run his world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not make everything easy for us. He does that for many different reasons. But what we have to know is that whatever happens in our life that's seemingly bad is ultimately for the good. And it's a win-win, and let me explain why. Because if it's for the bad, and there is no happy ending, sometimes you can't really argue with the fact that something is bad. Like, it's very hard to say if a person is in a terrible car accident, or if a person loses all his money, or if a person, it's very hard to say, oh, that's okay, gamzul taiva. Yeah, it's easy for me to preach to other people, gamzul taiva. When you're living through that, it's very hard. So there's two ways of understanding it. Either HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing this because he loves you. He's giving you hardships because it's a patch, it's a teichacha, but that's a sign that he loves you, and he's either giving you a kapara for it, or he's going to make it ultimately good. Like the pasuk says, "Ki Hashem Hashem Yav Hashem Yechiach." Whoever HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves, that's who he gives musar to. That's one way of looking at it. That's where things don't seem to have any happy ending, any silver lining. But a lot of things do have silver linings. Maybe most things have silver linings. You just need to be patient with Hashem. You have to understand that right now it seems very hard. It seems almost impossible. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a cheshbon shel olam. He has the whole perspective. He's not looking at it one-dimensionally, two-dimensionally. He has the whole panorama in front of him. He's the Kol Yachol, he's the Ein Seif, and he understands how everything he's doing for us is for the good. I used to have my mother had a cousin who operated a hotel in the Catskill Mountains. He owned a hotel in the Catskill Mountains. And it was a very successful, small hotel. I had my bar mitzvah there, Parshas Balak, many years ago. I'm not going to say how many. But I had my bar mitzvah there. And it was a very, very well, people trusted the kashrus. I don't even think he had a formal hechsher. They just trusted him. His name was Teddy Katz. And he had a safe in his office in the hotel where he kept all the cash, all the stuff coming in, and maybe people's jewelry, whatever. He kept all the stuff in the safe. One day, there was a worker in the hotel who put a gun to his head, to my cousin's head. And he said, "Listen, Mr. Katz, if you don't open up the safe, I'm going to have to blow your head off." B'zal Lashon. Now, left with no alternative, my cousin opened up the safe. The guy took all the money, and just to make sure that he wouldn't say anything, my cousin, he shot him in the stomach. True story. Tragic story. But that's not the end of the story. He was left for dead. He was lying on the floor of the office bleeding. And Hatzalah came. They took him to the local hospital. This is a maisa of maybe 35, 40 years ago. 35 years ago, let's say. Hatzalah rushed him to the they stopped the bleeding. They took X-rays or whatever. I don't think they had MRIs back then, but they took whatever the equivalent of an MRI, an X-ray was, and to see if there was any other shrapnel, bullets. And when they opened up his stomach, or when they looked at his stomach, they saw that he had a huge tumor that was growing in his intestines. Meaning that he never knew about that. If he had not been shot in the stomach, now that's not a pleasant thing to happen to a person. Rachman Litzan, no one should be shot in the stomach. He survived that bullet wound, and he was able to have emergency surgery to remove that tumor, that lethal malignant tumor, and he was able to live many years afterwards because they operated just in the nick of time. You want to have emuna when you hear things that seem tragic, and they are tragic, but make a cheshbon, go into the city of cheshbon and see what happened there. A bad thing turned into the best thing. And that's how life works. We used to have a Talmud in Lander. A very nice boy. He was there maybe 10, 12 years ago. Very geschmacka guy. I was schmoozing him when he came to yeshiva. He was telling me his life story. He says, Rabbi, I want you to know something that happened to me. He says, the worst day of my life was the best day of my life. I said, what do you mean? He said like this. When he was in high school, he went to a high school in Long Island. He was a great athlete. He was on the basketball varsity team, on the hockey varsity. He was on every team that he throughout high school. He was a superstar. Mamish, the captain of every team. He had a great arm, great shot, great everything. And he wasn't feeling well, and so he went to the doctor. And the doctor took MRIs, CAT scans, or whatever, and they found that there was a lot of cancer, Rachmana Litzlan, growing in his right arm. Now, this would be tragic for anyone, but it was a little bit more of a pinch because he was such a great athlete. Like, this was his whole life was sports and athletics, and you know, and to lose his right arm was like the worst thing for him. And for anyone, obviously, but it was just especially tragic for him, if you can say that. And they prepared for amputation. They have to amputate the arm before it spread. So they made a date, let's say a couple of weeks later, that would be the day that his arm would be amputated. Rachmana Litzlan, it's like a nightmare scenario for anyone that stops to think about it, anyone with a heart. And Vayhi Hayayim, that was the worst day of his life. He went into the hospital knowing that he would come out of the hospital without an arm. It's a guy in yeshiva. Before they did the surgery, they said, you know what, before we do this, it doesn't make sense to do the surgery. We have to first take one more CAT scan and see, you know, if it's spread yet, because, you know, we'll see what happens. So they did another CAT scan, and it spread further than his arm. His whole body was now full of cancer. So it didn't pay to amputate the arm, because you'd have to amputate your whole body to solve this one. There's no talus in amputation at this point. So this was, if the day started really lousy for him, it was just getting even worse and darker and gloomier for him, because now he thought, okay, I'm going to miss an arm and I'm going to live. Now I don't even know if I'm going to live. I have cancer all over my body. So they put him, as a result of this, they put him on a very intensive track of a chemotherapy, radiation. And they gave him mamish the highest dosages to stop this from spreading. And slowly but surely, b'chaste Hashem, he went into remission and the cancer went away. He was able, mamish, they were able to beat back the cancer, that there was no cancer anymore in his whole body. And today I'm thrilled to report he's married, healthy, bli ayin hara, he has a beautiful mishpacha. He says, the worst day of my life turned out to be the biggest blessing of my life. It was terrible that I had to go for an amputation of my arm. It was even worse that it spread, but that seemed to be the darkest moment in life. But look at how HaKadosh Baruch Hu was looking at it. He said, no, I don't want you to lose your arm. I'm going to spread the cancer to the body. That way you're not going to lose your arm. And then I'm going to give radiation and allow the radiation to be a refuah for your makkah. And so in retrospect, that terrible day was the greatest day of his life. This is the Cheshbon Hasholem. Don't look at everything today, because today it's depressing. But if you have emunah and bitachon, and again, I know that, you know, I sound like I'm probably the world's biggest expert in this. I'm one of the worst in this, okay? I'm not so cool, calm, and collected. But I know that if I would have emunah and bitachon properly, really, and I could tell you that if you would, then we would be the happiest people in the world. We would be the happiest people in the world. If you look around people in the world, you take a subway, or you look in shul, or you look in on the street, most people are not happy. There's not a natural smile on their face. It's just not. People are nervous. They have to pay their bills, and they have to deal with their children, and they have to go shopping, and they have to. It's a lot. Life is a lot. But if a person has emunah and bitachon in this shmuz, in what we're saying today, if you can be Moshe Belibay by making this cheshbon shalom, you will be the happiest person in the world, because everything is a win-win. The happiest people in Shas, Nachamish Gamzu, Gamzu L'Taiva, everything Gamzu L'Taiva, Rabbi Akiva, Kol Dovid Rachman L'Tava of it, everything is for the good. Imagine if we didn't just say that, we actually felt it, and we actually believed it. We would walk around whistling day and night. There's nothing bad. If I go out with a girl and it works out, you know, well, and she likes me and I like her, it's a shidduch, beautiful. Let's say I go out with a girl and I think this is for me, and then she dumps me unceremoniously, and I'm like, avo v'chafei reish, I can't believe this is my besher, this is who I was supposed to marry, and now what am I going to do? I'm, you know, terrible. Whenever guys come over to me to sulk like that, I'd say, listen, buddy, I promise you, I'll give you a haftacha right now that I don't know when, but whatever day it will happen, you will find a girl and you will tell me, b'pem olei, thank God that I did not marry that first girl, because I see today that it would have been the worst thing in the world for me. It happens. It's a maisa b'chol yayim. What you think in the current is true turns out to be not true. I could tell you this in business. I could tell you this in shidduchim. I could tell you it in marriage. A lot of times people have marriages and they're, you know, and it's not so easy. It's very rocky. And sometimes people right away throw in the towel. They get divorced. And sometimes that's a necessary thing to do because, you know, in extraordinary circumstances. But a lot of times, if you just give it time and let it, and work on it and let it grow, in the future, you'll see that it was good. It was good. HaKadosh Baruch Hu found this for me exactly for a certain reason. I needed this. I needed this type of wife. I needed to have children that were this way or that way. Everything is with a cheshbon. There's a cheshbon shel olam that we have to believe. And if we believe this, then we'll be happy. If we don't believe it, then we'll be like everybody else. And we'll have good days, we'll have bad days. When things go nicely for us, we'll be sort of happy. We'll be worried about other things happening, but we'll be sort of happy. But the people that are really happy people, when you walk into a shul and you see a guy with a smile on his face, I promise you that guy is a Baal Bitachon. That's the only thing. You talk to him for a minute, he says, God is in control. I have nothing to worry about. When you allow Hashem to be in the driver's seat and to be comfortable with somebody else in the driver's seat and not you, because we can't control anything. When you're comfortable with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the driver's seat and you have emunah and bitachon that He knows where to take us and He knows why He's going through this part of town and this seems to be a really bad neighborhood we're going through, but I trust that He knows where He's taking us and I trust that He knows, you know, why this happened along the way of my journey and why I had to go through this experience when I was a child and that experience when I was a teenager and this experience when I'm an adult. And why I had to go through so much trouble and pain, it's all for the good. It's either a kapara, which is amazing, because after we die, we're going to be really happy to have had those yisurim to wipe away a lot of the einshim of Eilam Haba. But most of the time, you even see in this world how it was really for the good. And that's the message from this week's parasha. That globally, HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes a cheshbon, and to the Kutzei Shel Yud, personally, HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes a cheshbon on nefesh. There's a reason. There's a reason for the cheshbon of the Rabbeinu Shem for everything. And if we believe that, we will be calm. We'll be happy. Whether or not, you know, we got the internship that we wanted or we were denied it. Whether or not, you know, we're engaged and we wanted a big fancy chasna, now because of COVID we're going to have a backyard wedding. Or I have to do Zoom dating instead of this dating. I can't make money because I'm not able to go. It's hard. It's impossibly hard. There are people really suffering out there from the situation that we're in today. People are losing their homes. They're losing their cars. They're losing their livelihoods, their stores, their restaurants, their businesses. It's an eis tzara for the world. And I'm not here to try to say that everything is amazing. It's not my place to tell people that are having hardships, you know, just take it with a big grain of salt and chill. It's not my place. That's not what I'm trying to do here. For us personally, when we have tzaras of any sort and we're able to look at it not from our puny little perspective here on planet Earth, but from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's vantage point, perched on the Kisei HaKavod and seeing all the pieces of the puzzle and being able to know exactly how everything interlocks so perfectly, that's the way that we will have serenity, yishuv hadas, peace of mind, enjoy Shabbos, enjoy Yontif, enjoy a day off, enjoy our learning, have the Yishuv Hadas to be able to learn without worrying about what's going to be. Because I know I could trust God. I could trust Hashem to do the right thing because He's the Kol Yachol. He never steered me wrong in the past. Everything that had seemed bad in my life, really, I see now there was a reason for. When we are able to talk about this, it does so much. I think the Ger Rebbe used to say on the pasuk in Hallel, "He'emanti ki adaber," and the way he understood it homiletically was, "He'emanti, my emuna gets stronger and stronger." You know when? Ki adaber, when I speak about it. When you speak about these types of things, your emuna gets so strong. A lot of times I had in my life tremendous stories of Hashgacha Pratis, and I've given many shmuzin about them. The problem is that I didn't write all of them down. And the things that you don't write down, you forget. But how many times in our daily life do we see the Yad Hashem? And we see it, we say, wow, God is great. Did that ever happen to anybody? It's like, wow, thank God that I didn't get this. You know, had I had that summer job, I would never have been able to, you know, have the freedom to start my own business and do this and do that. I'd be a slave to somebody. It happens all the time. Of course, the famous stories about, you know, missing the plane and then the plane crashes or the plane doesn't, whatever it is. But but it happens all the time. Whether we realize the nisim that are taking place around us or we don't realize the nisim, there are miracles that are happening as we speak right now. Maybe because all of us are here on Zoom right now. If we had not come to the Shmooze, maybe we would have been walking in the street and Chas v'Shalom, something bad would have happened to us. I don't know. We will never know this. But if you believe that there's a reason for everything, then you'll know that it was good that I was here. And this is the way of the Cheshbon Ha'olam. This is how HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. Hamanti ki adaber. Let's talk about this. Let's write these things down. I have in yeshiva, unfortunately I don't have access to it because it's in yeshiva, but I have in yeshiva a book, like one of these Chidushei Torah books, you know, these like nice notebooks just with blank pages, and I made it a Ashkacha Pratis Kuntris for myself. And every single time when I have access to it, that I see a Yad Hashem, I go to my book in Beis Medrash, and I just scribble down like a few lines of what happened. And then I'm able to look back and chap that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was so good. And then when bad times hit, really bad times, I'm able to open up them and say, listen, the same God that got me through those things with Ashkacha Pratis, he's still around. He's still very much in control, and he knows why he's doing this to me. The stronger our emunah, the stronger our bitachon in these types of things, the happier lives will live, the happier our families will be as a result of our happiness. We'll give this over to our parents, we'll give it over to our siblings, we'll give it over to our wives, we'll give it over to our children, to our grandchildren someday, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in control of the world. And never be afraid, because he's in control. Gam ki eilech begeitz halmavis, even when I'm walking into the valley of death itself, I'm not afraid of evil befalling me, ki ata imadi, because you are with me. You're with me. There's a God in the world that's with all of us right now. He's protecting us. He's watching over us. And even when things that are not so great, that were not in the plans, happen, gamzul taiva. Al kinyayim ramayshim, you want to get rain in your heart and our heart, that's so nervous always and so inundated by fear and by anxieties of what will be and who am I going to marry, what kind of job am I going to get, am I going to be able to be back in yeshiva and El, all these anxieties and these fears, these worries that we have, and we're all worried about. It's hard to daven, it's hard to learn because we're always busy, and as you get older, there's more things on your plate that you have to worry about. But if we're able to really train ourselves as best as humanly possible to believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the world, get control of your heart, of your fears, of your anxieties by Bayu Cheshbon. Enter the city of Cheshbon. And when you enter the city of Cheshbon and understand that just like the city of Cheshbon, there was a Cheshbon Shel Olam in that city, that's the Cheshbon Shel Olam that's in our personal cities as well. It's Hashem, we should all take these lessons to heart, and we want to wish all of you a beautiful, beautiful Shabbos.